Welcome to Solo 2.0, an empowerment podcast hosted by two sisters living in LA, making their way through the health and wellness world. I'm Ryan Birch.
And I'm Jess Sukan. Each week, we're committed to bringing you conversations with risk-taking, resilient guests from diverse backgrounds,
interviews with experts on controversial or misunderstood topics that will expand your perspective,
and lively roundtable discussions with our mom, hormone health educator, Candace Birch.
We're driven to provide the support and motivation needed to ignite growth, confidence, and purpose so you can step into that 2.0 version of you.
We can't wait to dig into these conversations and hope you'll join us every week for a new episode.
Let's get into it.
Welcome back to the Solo 2.0 podcast. This is Jess, holistic health coach and founder of Body Bliss by Jess. And normally my sister would be chiming in to introduce herself as my co-host and the founder of Your Hormone Balance. But today is a little different because you just have me. Raya had a little last minute work commitment pop up. And initially I wanted to say, oh, you know, let's just reschedule it. But she kind of encouraged me to do this episode solo, especially because it is a topic that I feel incredibly passionate about. It's what I've centered my whole business around. It's what I could talk about for hours and hours and hours. And it's also something that our guest, who happens to be one of my good friends, is very passionate about as well. It's something that she and I have had a lot of experience with in our own lives and now with the clients we work with every day. And that topic is body image, and specifically how to form a healthier relationship with food and your unique and beautiful body. So I always say, I'm always such a big fan of getting comfortable with being uncomfortable. I know we hear it a lot, but it's so true. I think there's been a lot of moments in my life where I've been incredibly uncomfortable, and those moments of growing pains really show us that we are growing. That's what we're doing, and I think that's really where the magic happens. So thank you for being along with me on this maybe a little bit bumpy of a ride. I hope it's not too bumpy, but you know what? I think that a little bit of bump is more fun than no bump. So thank you for being with me, and I'm excited to dive into this topic. I'm going to share a little bit of my backstory before we call in Tessie. But to give you some background on her, Tessie Tracy is a speaker, certified eating psychology coach, and creator of the Happy Goal Method. As a lifelong athlete, she started gymnastics at the age of 4. Even though intense exercise came with a unique set of challenges, as she was born with a rare heart condition. After defying the odds all the way through a collegiate cheerleading career, she was tempted into continuing her competitive career with bodybuilding, but discovered that the restrictive eating and being judged solely on her appearance was not her true definition of health. This is why she loves to help women finally overcome challenges like imbalance, restriction, emotional eating, and negative body image to become the next best version of themselves through her digital products and coaching programs. She's been a featured speaker and wellness expert for various companies and media platforms, including Nissan, Bank of America, Well and Good, and Experience Life magazine. And I can attest to the fact that Tessie is an incredible speaker. It's actually the first day that I ever met her, she was speaking at an event, and this was in the before times when events were a thing, and my good friend Carla Romo, who was also a podcast guest back in the beginning when our podcast first started, she's a dating and relationship coach, and she and Tessie had a wellness company together, and they hosted events, and I was invited. I heard Tessie speak, and I was just blown away by not only her enthusiasm and love for what she does, but for her ability to really touch every person in the room and to get people to open up to themselves and others in a way maybe they haven't done for a long time or maybe ever at all, and to give them just really tangible tools and takeaways that they could implement in their lives, not only that week, that month, that year, but that day. And I definitely saw transformation within the women on that day, and I was drawn to her, and we became friends, and she has since moved to Colorado. She is a newlywed. I got to attend her Zoom wedding, which was such a crazy experience and so magical and amazing to be a part of. And I just am so grateful to be having this kind of catch up with her and sharing her wisdom and knowledge with all of you. So before we give her a call, I wanted to share a little bit about my personal battle with negative body image and just some of the tools that I've used to kind of bust out of those dark places. And because we don't have a lot of time, I'm not going to go into my whole story, but I will touch on it. And before I do, I did want to request that if you are enjoying our podcast, you're loving what you're hearing so far, if you'll just take 30 seconds to go rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast, because not only do we read every comment, review, not only do we love hearing from you, but it's the number one way that we can grow and reach more people to share important messages like what you're going to hear here today. And we are just so grateful for all of you. And we want to expand this community to create a really supportive space for anyone to come and feel seen and heard and empowered with the tools that they need to step into what we call the 2.0 versions of themselves. And then to also be able to give back to the world in a way that feels really positive. So, okay. It is almost happy hour time here in LA. I don't know about you guys or where you're at in the world, but go ahead and pour yourself a nice little glass of wine or a little bubbly or maybe a mocktail or some water. Fill up that water bottle, get hydrated, and join me for some story time and some tips. Okay, so this is going to be quick, but hopefully it resonates with some of you. And if it does, please do reach out to me. I'm always down for a conversation. I love to connect with the community. So I really started to realize that I was unhappy in my body when I put on about 35 to 40 pounds after I quit the swim team. And this was at the end of high school. And I honestly never really thought about my weight, thought about what my body necessarily looked like from a weight perspective before quitting the swim team, because I was thin. I could basically eat whatever I wanted and not put on weight. And when you're working out, you know, 2.5 hours a day with swimming, your metabolism is very high, also because you're young. And, you know, I was raised in a household that had very healthy eating habits. And I loved the home-cooked meals that I had and the fresh juices we would have on the weekends and the buckwheat pancakes and all that stuff. But when I went off campus and I had just worked out for 2 hours swimming, the last thing I wanted was like a brown bread sandwich. I wanted a foot-long Subway. I wanted a family-sized pack of cookies. I wanted all of the maple glazed donuts from Starbucks. I wanted the Venti Frappuccino. I did not want my home cooking. So that's what I did. And I did that all throughout swim team and never really paid the price health-wise or weight-wise or mindset-wise until I quit those sports and I felt that I had ballooned up overnight. And even though I knew that I had gained weight, I didn't want to draw attention to my body because I always felt like if I pointed out or I tell people that I've gained weight, then they're going to notice. And I just kind of just kept it inside. And I started layering on lots of jackets and layers and makeup and literally just putting layers and layers over my face and body to hide. And this went on through college. And even after college, I tried every diet under the sun. I did Atkins while I was in college. I went on the Master Cleanse. I counted calories. I tracked macros. I worked out for 2 hours a day during the week and then just went out and had multiple drinks and fourth meal every weekend and would convince myself. And I think everyone did this where it was like, oh, you know, we partied last night. We're so hungover. Let's go get hangover brunch because you know what? We have to because we got to soak up all that alcohol with carbs and grease. So in our minds, we convinced ourselves that you had to eat all of those greasy foods all day Sunday in order to heal for Monday. Duh. So that's what I did. And I was just so low in my body and my self-worth. And I started dating a guy who I met through Facebook. He was rated one of U of O's top 10 hottest guys on Facebook, which was updated like every month, which is so ridiculous. And somehow I found him through that. And we started talking and he was just pretty awful. And I was with him for 4 years and he cheated on me multiple times, yet he was extremely insecure about any guy that I would ever talk to. Like if I even walked past a guy on campus and the guy acknowledged me and said hello to me and I acknowledged them and said hello back, he would turn to me and say, "What did you do, Jess? Did you fuck him? Is that why they're saying hi to you? Sorry, excuse my French," but that's what he would say. And you know, I would make a wrong turn down a side street and he would say, God damn it, Jessica, sometimes I feel like you only use 10% of your brain and you're a smart girl. So that's really sad because there's the other 90% of the brain that's not getting your attention and just these hurtful, mean spirited things. And he proceeded to just, it was a very emotionally abusive relationship. He would cheat on me and I would get back together with him because he would pull out all the stops, all the flowers, all the sorries, all the things that guys or women do that are abusive in a relationship. And I would get back together with him and I would always believe that it was going to change, and it never did. And eventually I broke free from that relationship and I spent a year and a half after, at the end of college and then like the last year of college and a half year after that, getting to know myself. And that was the year and a half where I was alone. It was that solo time. And I am telling you, even though I did go on to experience more yo-yo dieting and restrictive tendencies, which we don't have time to get into right now, but I did want to focus on the point that in the year and a half after that relationship, before I met my husband, Josh, I focused on self-love and self-care. And that was one of the healthier points in my life in which I started to kind of recite positive affirmations, which I didn't really realize were affirmations at the time, but I started to remind myself, you are a catch. Like somebody, there are multiple men out there who would be so lucky to be with you. You have so much to offer. You are such a good sister. You're a good friend. You're a great listener. You give your friends advice. You're there at the drop of a hat for work. You know, you work hard. You are committed. You're passionate. And I would just try to build myself up that way. And I started to surround myself with really positive people. Letting go of that toxic relationship was huge. And I also let go of another very toxic friendship. I broke up with a girlfriend who was my best friend. And I surrounded myself with people who made me feel good in my own skin. And, you know, my sister has always been that person to me. So shout out to her. No matter what, the lowest of lowest places I'm in, I go to her. She talks me through it. She slaps sense into me. She gives me things to think about. She checks in with me. I mean, she is seriously everything to me and has helped me so much. So shout out to her. My family's also been very supportive. And then meeting Josh, you know, he was the first guy that I ever met who really listened to me, who laughed at my corny jokes and all of my puns, and who never once made me feel like I needed to change my body to fit the mold or to be what he wanted me to be. When I was with that ex-boyfriend, I was always striving to be more like his ex-girlfriend because he would always talk about how she was the love of his life. And so I would look at her and she was super skinny and I thought, oh, well, maybe he'd love me more if I was as skinny as her, or maybe he would love me more if I was as tan as she was. So I would spray tan all the time, or not even spray tan, just bed tan, which is so bad, so unhealthy. And I would, you know, throw on so much bronzer to try to be tanner like she was and like all of the other women I thought that he would be into. But with Josh, it was like he never wanted me to mold myself to be anyone else other than myself. And I think that that's so key, is that we need to spend time loving up on ourselves and putting ourselves first. And we hear it all the time, but you really, truly can't fully love someone until you love yourself. And I think that the biggest key to all of that is that they love you more too when you love yourself more. I don't think that I could have been with Josh when I was in my lowest of lows, with my lowest self-esteem, not trusting myself, not speaking up for myself, always apologizing for everything, for the person I was, covering up, just hating my body. I don't think we would have been together, because I think a big part of what he loved about me and was attracted to me by was the confidence that I had started to build in myself and who I was. And even though there were years to come where I started to restrict myself again, he was always there to say, no, Jess, like, you don't need to be doing this. You know, it's about the experience. Like, I don't need or want you to be thinner. Like, I want you to be happy. And so having positive, supportive people in your life is huge. I also think when it comes to food, one of the tips that really helped me once I did kind of break free from restriction was taking away the morality around food. So removing foods like or words like bad and good. So not saying like, oh, I was bad this weekend because I had pizza and like I cheated on my diet, because we don't cheat on foods. We might cheat on people. My ex-boyfriend cheated on me, but we can't cheat on a pizza or cheat on a salad with a pizza. Just ridiculous. We didn't cheat, you know, even just practicing changing that verbiage to something like treat just has a much more positive, feeling around it, and not, you know, trying to remove words like bad and good. Having a food is just a choice. That's all it is. It's not bad. It's not good. And that really helps to detach, our self-worth from the foods that we're eating. So I think that's really important. And then I would say to just focusing more on obsessing over how we want to feel in our bodies versus how we want to look. So how do we want to feel physically and emotionally? Like, what kind of energy levels do we want to have? What experiences do we want to be having? What kind of a mark do we want to leave on the world? What sort of friendships do we want to cultivate? You know, thinking about that kind of an experience of our lives versus like, how many pounds do I want to weigh? You know, what do I want to look like in a bathing suit? Because all of that is just aesthetics. It's just on the exterior. It really doesn't tell us anything about who we are on the inside. We're so much more than just our bodies, and we have one life to live. So we have to stop obsessing over the exterior and comparing ourselves to other people and just thinking about how we want to live our lives. What do we want to look back on and remember? You know, I went to Italy last year, or I guess longer, almost 2 years ago now, before the pandemic, and was in a healthy place finally where I could enjoy pizza and pasta and gelato and whatever I wanted every single day while I was there without overthinking it, without planning a diet to put myself on when I came back from that trip, and just fully immersing myself in the culture and having conversations with locals and just going where the wind took us, you know, being spontaneous. And in the past, my diets never allowed me to be spontaneous. I lived in such a box, and I was only ever quote unquote spontaneous on my pre-planned cheat days, which weren't spontaneous at all. So, you know, thinking about what are the experiences that you want to be present for, and just really trying to cultivate that and really focusing on how you want to feel. Because when you start to take steps, like if you do want to feel more energized, if you do want to feel less achy or have better digestion, when you focus on those things, if weight loss is your goal, naturally you may start to release weight because you're focused on how you want to feel versus just being so honed in on the number on the scale. And you'll start to learn what makes you feel good, but you also start to realize that food is joyful and enjoyable, and it's meant to be an experience that's looked forward to. And how can we bring more joy to that ritual of eating? And that's something that, you know, I would love to do another episode on, all about. But these are some of the thoughts that I'd love to leave you with, and some of the tools that I sort of use and that I work with my clients on. So I hope those have been helpful. If you would like me to do another episode on this stuff, definitely let us know, let me know. And we're going to call up Tessie. So I'm so excited. Happy Friday for me. It's probably Monday for you, because we usually release podcasts on Mondays. But here we go.
Hello.
Hey, Tessie.
Oh, hey, Jess. How's it going?
So good. I'm so excited for this call.
Me too. I'm super pumped.
Yeah, it's going to be such a fun chat, and it's Friday. It's basically happy hour. It's definitely happy hour where you are, right? It's what, yes. 4:15 there?
Yes, and that's why I have sent Bruce to the store to come home with some wine.
Amazing. Yay. And you were just sharing with me briefly that you guys are buckling up for a snowstorm, right?
Yes. So they're saying it could be like worse than it's been in almost a decade, like 2 to 4 feet. So,
oh my God.
We'll see what actually happens, but it hasn't started snowing yet, so we'll see.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, you definitely need your wine and your rations and all.
Yes, wine, a movie, and a blanket.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Have you guys picked out which movie you're going to watch?
Oh, we haven't. We've been watching a lot of MasterChef, like old episodes.
Yes. Oh my God. No way. Josh and I got super into that because, well, you know, we have a mutual friend, Liv, who was on MasterChef.
Yeah. Oh, that was the show she was on? I couldn't remember. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Oh, I probably haven't even gotten to the season that she's on.
Yeah. So I think she's on season 7. And for those listening, Liv is an incredible holistic chef who's a friend of ours as well. And she was also on our podcast. You're going to have to listen to that episode. But I would love for you to just take us back a bit and kind of help us understand what pivotal experiences in your life led you to do the work you do now, helping women feel more confident in their own skin. Because I know that you went through a lot being, you know, a young athlete and some of the pressures around that. But I'm just curious, what would you say are some of those pivotal experiences?
Yeah. So kind of 3 pivotal experiences and turning points come to mind. When I was growing up, like you said, I was a young athlete. I never felt at a very young age in a position where I had a negative relationship with food. There were some things in my family that would come up, like sometimes after, it was so weird, but even after a 4-hour gymnastics practice, like I would come home and like I just didn't eat that much dinner. And it wasn't because I was trying not to. It was just like I was just honestly, you know, was done. Mm-hmm. And my sister would maybe say, you know, like say something to the effect of like, that's not healthy, or she needs to eat more, or she's too skinny. So there was like a little bit there as far as like subconsciousness. But the first moment was actually in high school. It was a traumatic event that happened. So I was 17 at the time, and the guy who, he was my former boyfriend, he was going off to college, but he was still at that time my best friend. Like he was that person who, I have a heart condition, and he was the person who made me feel more comfortable about the fact that I was a 3-sport athlete, but couldn't run a mile as fast as like anyone else in the school. So I was always having to do extra training and like pushing myself extra hard to like keep up. Yeah. And he was just like, he was the person who would slow down while we were running and would just like, you know, tell me it's okay, and made me feel so much better about that. And he was the one who, even though I was like, you know, like popular or whatever, it was like, me and my best friend Molly joke about this all the time. She's been my best friend since high school. Like we might have been like popular and in student council and that sort of thing and like cheerleaders, but we have this huge insecurity complex, as like any teenage yep. girl probably does. So we always joked about, you know, we never felt like those girls. So like I always bit my nails. I still bite my nails. Cody made me feel more comfortable about just who I was and comfortable in my own skin.
Yeah.
So he passed away the summer after my junior year.
Oh my God. I had no idea. I'm so sorry.
Yeah. And it was like really bad. I mean, I grew up in small town Colorado, so it was a shock to the system. Cody was quarterback of the football team, student body president, headed to a wrestling school, like on a scholarship. Like he was just this amazing kid. And so it shocked, you know, it was a huge just shock to the whole town. And I remember feeling so lost. I felt, you know, like I had lost my best friend. I didn't know how to deal with those emotions. I, at that point, the therapist I saw, it was a little, I'm all for therapy, but it was a little convoluted because she was also working with someone who was another one of Cody's ex-girlfriends.
Oh, geez.
And she said something in the session about like something that just wasn't true about Cody. And it just, so I wasn't asking or receiving the support that I needed.
Yeah.
And mostly I wasn't asking. So I kind of, you know, put this wall up and acted okay. But what the behavior that came out of that was binging. So I was waking up, not waking up, but like kind of late at night. I remember like I got into this mode where I was just waiting for that release. And my mom would buy these delicious Dove little bonbon ice cream bars. They were so good. And I would just go in the kitchen when I was by myself with the lights out and I would just eat. And all I knew in that moment as 17-year-old sad Tessie is that I felt better.
Yeah.
But then in the morning, like I would even look. So this is, I like to distinguish the difference if anyone listening feels they're struggling with either stress eating or emotional eating. So a binge eating episode is a little bit different because it's almost an out-of-body experience. Because I would look in the trash and I'd be like, whoa, I don't even remember all of those wrappers. Like I was not present while I was eating. So that's kind of binging, whereas overeating or stress eating is usually like we're pretty conscious. We're like overeating or we're eating, you know, something that's like a craving food. It might still be an unwanted behavior, but it's kind of different than like that sort of blackout eating experience.
That's such a good point. I feel like that's something that it's a good reminder to me too, because I feel like I will refer to myself as having been a binge eater or gone through binges, but I think that is an important distinction that a lot of those times were conscious and that's not always what it looks like.
Yeah. And to me, you know, I didn't realize at the time that was like one of my main coping mechanisms, but even after I healed from that experience and, you know, went through my grief and all of that and got into college, you know, that got better. The behavior that kind of stuck around for me was more like stress and emotional eating, where then, you know, finals or a relationship or something else I was like stressed about or angry about. And I was kind of turning to food and usually sugar. So the second pivotal point was after college, I was a competitive cheerleader in college. So here I am at 25 and I had been an athlete since the age of 4. So I was having huge sports withdrawals and was like, what should I do? And I was like, well, I've always been told I would be good at, you know, bodybuilding competition. So I was living in Denver at the time. I hired coaches and started training for a figure category of a fitness bodybuilding competition where you don't get like huge. You're just like, you know, you are super muscular, but you're still very lean and like small.
Yeah.
So went in again, feeling like, yeah, I'm, you know, pretty good. Have a good head on my shoulders. I ignored a lot of red flags along the way. So the thing I reference now is that I already had a little bit of a sensitive relationship with food, and I could have been a little more aware of a possible tendency to have a snowball effect. But I had no idea that I was going to have a snowball effect. I was like, this is just like another sport. And I, you know, which it was. There were a lot of things about that training period that I'm super proud of. Having my heart condition, I got to a point where I was like running a mile faster than I've ever run. I could do like 10 pull-ups with, you know, no assistance. And I felt, you know, like I was getting in really good shape.
Yeah.
Now, there was a turning point in my training when I was like, oh, you know, my trainers were like, you still have like 10 pounds to lose. And I was like, well, I feel good now.
Oh, yeah.
And I was on fat burning pills. I was taking 1,000 milligrams of caffeine a day and drinking coffee, which if I had have asked my cardiologist if that was okay with my heart condition,
it would have been
huge red flag, like a no way you should not be doing that. But you know, I was caught up and it got to the point that I never thought I would be at, which I was eating so clean that I even got judgmental of other people who ate like anything, you know, processed or that, you know, I was cooking all my food. Mm-hmm. My social life was dead because I was like, you probably can relate to that one.
Definitely got judgmental and resentful and all those unfair emotions.
Yeah. And, you know, and then to the point where, because I was measuring everything and taking my weight pretty much every morning and, counting my calories, that I was even, you know, and having this pressure of my coaches reminding me, like, we won't let you on stage unless you, like, reach this, you know, weight and body composition. And I got to the point where I was scared to have a piece of gum because it was 5 calories, where I was like, that can't fit in unless I go get back on the elliptical and like burn those 5 calories, like, which is scientifically like not even a thing.
Did you actually do that though? Would you like go on the elliptical and?
Yep.
Oh man. That takes things to a whole another level.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that all culminated the week of my show and then the few weeks that followed, which this is pivot point number 2, but it's the biggest one. So I felt fat the day of the show. I had lost my period, was 9% body fat. I weighed like 120 and I had started training at like 145. So I was like, I describe that day as like the unhealthiest day of my life, even though I was being judged on stage as like, you know, she's fit, she's, you know, muscular. And I won the entire show. And I ate real food that night. My coaches said, you know, go out with your friends, have dinner, and then get right back on your diet tomorrow. But I didn't know why they wanted me to go back on my diet the next day. And I felt, first of all, I felt so sick. I think I went out to dinner and had like chicken parmesan or something, and I hadn't had dairy or any like fried food in like, you know, months. So I had such a bad stomach ache. The next day, I was like, my body, it was a combination of my body being physiologically starved. And then that mental part came back where I was like, well, I don't want to be on my diet and I just need sugar. And the binge eating came back. And then I got depressed because I started to get bloated and like all this water weight happened. I threw all of my supplements away. My coaches had like a family emergency. So they weren't really around to support me in what was going on with my body and why getting back on my diet and then easing off of such a strict diet slowly, without it being such a shock to the system. Like it sent me in a spiral of depression and negative body image. And just like, I was ashamed. I was ashamed that I mentally couldn't quote unquote stay on my diet. And I think that the mental part from that show, although I knew it was unhealthy, and I've never shared this, but I actually went to eating disorder therapy for a little bit.
Okay.
And I didn't resonate personally with where I was at. I didn't resonate with labeling that I had a full-on eating disorder, but I acknowledged that I felt in a place where I had disordered eating. Mm-hmm. Because after the show, I was very much out of control, like going to the store, buying cookie dough, peanut butter, like, and, you know, again, it was a physiological thing where my body was at in starvation, but it was also the mental stuff coming back and I would get sick. I didn't try and make myself throw up, but I threw up a couple times just because, again, like the shock to my system and I was binging. So moving out of that, to be honest, there was a lot that really stuck around. And the third pivotal point would be when I found eating psychology and, you know, got certified in that. And I also found CrossFit and got certified in that. And CrossFit felt great to just get back to. And granted, there's still body image stuff that happens in CrossFit, but it felt like a space that I was allowed to just compete against myself again from a performance standpoint, like how many push-ups can I do as opposed to, you know, what do my arms look like because I do push-ups or whatever.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's more that you're doing it for yourself and you get to fuel yourself the way that you want to, not because someone's having you do a weigh-in or checking your food diary.
Exactly. Yeah. So yes, it felt like a much more empowering approach as far as like fitness. And then, you know, with eating psychology, when I started to learn about the science of eating slow and learning more about, you know, body image and how much of a thing, you know, it is for so many of us and getting tools to actually work on that was a positive pivotal point that mm-hmm. took me to where I am now and why I like to help other people work through not just like emotional or binge eating, but also, you know, that body image stuff and things that we carry around that are maybe comments that other people said to us. And we've been carrying it around since we were 12, but now we're in our 20s and 30s and we still have a complex and that memory is still so potent. So it takes some intention to kind of work through it.
Yeah. And I'm so grateful to you for sharing this story because I know that sometimes it can be hard to dig into those past experiences, especially losing your good friend and partner and just going back to that version of yourself where you didn't, you know, feel confident in your own skin, that you were being judged just based on the exterior and not what was inside. And that hurts, you know, and it can be challenging to go back to that place. But I also know in the work that you do and the work that I do, that that is such a pivotal point of healing, is if you can go back to those darker places and bring that darkness into the light, because that's really the place in which you're able to heal. And so we actually talked about this recently on our past episode with the founders of Girl Powerful, but just how important it is to kind of rewrite some of those stories that we tell ourselves. And I'm kind of curious, how did you do that for yourself?
Yeah. So one exercise that was really powerful for me, and it's not, and I do it with most of my clients, especially clients who are looking to work on body image. And it's not to say that it's healed in one exercise or one day,
right.
But it's a writing practice where you write a letter to your body. And my Mark David, who is the founder of the Institute for the Psychology of Eating, where I'm trained through, we did this exercise actually at our graduation, and he led us through this exercise. And, you know, many of us who are interested in learning about eating psychology usually have our own powerful story of we are those wounded healers is the term, where we've been through our own stuff. As soon as we're starting to come out the other side, the first thing we want to do is help someone else through it. So we're there at graduation. So he took us through our own personal exercise. So step one, and I'm going to share the whole thing because if it's valuable for people, but usually I'll keep step two as a surprise until you've completed step one.
Okay.
But so that you have it, I'll share the whole thing. So step one,
that's amazing,
is that you sit down, give yourself, you know, light a candle, get out your journal, and write a letter to your body. So the biggest point of this, and I know I love Rise journaling exercises, and you know, it's the same thing where it's just like no judgment.
Yeah.
You write out everything, you just start, dear body, you almost separate as your body is a different entity than you. You write out every emotion. If you are mad at your body for not losing weight, write it down. If you are mad at your digestive system because it's messed up or, you know, it gives mm-hmm. you challenges, you write that down. You let out every emotion, anything that comes up. And just you can even take yourself through your journey of things that, you know, just have happened, and you're talking directly to your body. You can share even things you're celebrating about it or you're grateful for. If that comes up, totally fine. The biggest part is to get the negative emotion out, and that's really important. And then maybe take some space and leave it for a few days.
Okay.
And then part two is that you write, your body writes a letter back to you. And if possible, you want to write this with your opposite hand. So like I'm left-handed. And when we did the second part, I wrote with my right hand, my bad hand. And what that does is it puts you in your body because you have to very intentionally focus. And then there's also this part where it's almost like your inner child writing, because it's awful. But now you're separating yourself again. You are your physical body and you're talking to you, your essence, your spirit, your soul, you know, your consciousness, and you're responding to the letter that was just written about you.
So, that's incredible.
You know, what came up for me in that exercise, I was bawling, first of all, because stuff around my heart came up, and when my body was writing back to me, the message that I wouldn't have gotten to unless I did that exercise was, I've always been here for you, Tessie. I'm designed to take care of you. Even if you hate me and pinch my belly and, you know, look at my arms and think they're too big, I'm going to be here for you. So it was like this, I'm like tearing up right now just thinking about it.
I'm tearing up.
Like it's, you know, it was a really, it's, and it's so true. Like our body, it is designed to take care of us. It does 1,000 things on our behalf every day. And it doesn't mean that that just makes it easy to love it and for us to flip a switch and be like, oh yeah, I should have body love. But it's a very powerful reminder to even do things like this on a regular basis to keep ourselves in that, you know, that gratitude of what our body does do for us and that it does have our back and that, you know, when stuff around body image and body comparison comes up, whether we're comparing ourselves to something we used to look like or someone else that we think we should look like, it's good to, you know, to be grounded in the gift of our own body, because every body is a miracle.
Yeah, that's such a powerful tool. And it is interesting how I think today with us being so interconnected socially, you know, social media, laptops, everything is so digital. And we're even, you know, listening to books on Audible instead of reading them. And, you know, we're rarely picking up a pen and putting our thoughts down on paper. And it just is so incredibly healing. And we can work through so much on our own. And of course, asking for help and seeking a therapist or a coach or whatever is also very beneficial. But sometimes when you're in those dark places and you think, you know, I can't afford to talk to somebody or I don't have time or whatever it is, it's like you always can access the power of the written word and use that as a form of therapy.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. Yeah. And even going through, I would say another thing that supported my self-love journey was along the lines of, you know, seeking support, seeking outside, you know, space to talk to share, to grow, is I did like some leadership workshops where you're working on emotional intelligence and transformation. So there were a lot of active, very kind of cathartic exercises where you're working through childhood wounds and really tender parts of your life in a safe space and then getting coached through it and, you know, coming out the other side. Again, it's something that might be a repeated thing to keep healing for a little while, but you're coming out the other side feeling, you know, 1,000 pounds lighter.
Yeah.
Pun intended. Talking yeah. About
yeah, exactly. We don't want you to try to lose 1,000 pounds. yes, I think that's a really important point too, is that it's a combination effect. You know, it is the writing, it's the, tapping into yourself and the messages that your body is trying to send you on a daily basis and really listening, because so often we're not listening. You know, it's like we might have a migraine headache or a stomach ache or whatever, and we want to go to, oh, my body's rebelling against me. Why is this happening to me? You know, gosh, like why on this one day, instead of taking a moment to think about, okay, what is my body trying to tell me? It really ultimately does have my back, you know, yes. And maybe it's time for me to listen and to kind of evaluate some of the habits that I have or the way that I speak to myself. And, you know, I work with clients too, where it's like they're having digestive issues or they're like super constipated. And not that that's funny at all. It's not. It's so painful and it's awful. But we want to go to like, oh, I must have eaten something wrong. And what could that have been? But sometimes that constipation is just, or that digestive, those digestive issues are you holding on to something, you not allowing yourself to release some stress and anxiety. And you're literally clenching your entire body to where you're not even giving yourself space to release in that way.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that, I love that you mentioned that, because it's, yeah, it's something I've come across quite a bit. And even that, you know, even how I just shared, like, oh, you feel 1,000 pounds lighter, like there's different things like emotional weight, or there's different things. Like I had a client once who was just dead set on the weight loss. And it was, you know, something between like 10 and 15 pounds. And through our work together, we, through time, we started to focus actually a little more on body image. So I always, you know, I always try to piece that out, where weight can be a challenge, and oftentimes it can be something connected to maybe we have something autoimmune going on, maybe we're on medication and like it's literally out of our control, like where our body weight might go for a while, maybe we just had a breakup or a change of job or a global pandemic, and we're noticing it's been a year and, you know, I've definitely, nothing else has changed and I've like gained some weight. So there's a difference between seeking weight balance when, you know, something has happened, and going through decade after decade of your life always feeling like you need that last 10 to 15 pounds gone.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's more of, I need to work on body image.
So that's actually a great place to kind of segue into that. What would that kind of work look like? So how would you transition, you know, a client who is dead set on wanting to lose 10 or 15 pounds to being like, actually, we're going to scale back a little bit and we're going to focus on body image?
Yeah. So the first thing that needs to happen, and if someone's not, if you're not there yet, it's totally fine. But the very first thing is that someone has to be sick of their own cycle of like, I just keep going on diets. I know it's something that no matter what size I am, I want to love my body. I know that feels so challenging, but I'm ready. I'm ready to try something different. I'm ready to get uncomfortable and stop the cycle that I've been in, or at least experiment with stopping it. So that has to be the first decision. And it's no shame if we're not there yet. It can be, we can just be aware of where we maybe want to head for a while before we start to take action around it. But yeah, if someone's at a point where they're like, you know, it's a very much a human condition. Sometimes we hit the bottom of our own barrel before we're like really ready to make a sharp shift. Yeah. So in that process, that's where I'm very clear with a client like that. Hey, like, you know, we're going to start, depending on where they are, we're going to start reeling back on weighing ourselves. If it's like, hey, I weigh myself every week. Okay. Are you open to starting to just weigh yourself every 2 weeks or every 3 weeks? So I'm a big fan of baby steps, because just like when we cut out, you know, the donuts that we love, or the alcohol 6 days a week or seven days or 5 days a week, and then, you know, after a certain amount of time, we've been doing quote unquote good, and then we, you know, bounce five times backwards. So it's the same with starting to shift even the behaviors that we want to fully get rid of. So if we're working towards not weighing ourselves, cool, let's just start weighing ourselves less. The second part is, if you've been tracking food or tracking calories like obsessively, sometimes I will use food tracking depending on the client. If they don't necessarily struggle with a body image thing, and maybe it is like a digestive thing, that's different. But if we're working on getting rid of those obsessive counting behaviors due to like a weight, you know, control type of situation,
yeah,
working towards letting go of the counting, letting go of the tracking, and then lastly, it's working on relationship with food. So like you mentioned, where it was like there's was this huge thing of like, oh, it's not my cheat day, I'm not allowed to have that, instead of taking a deep breath and being like, I don't know, this happened to me today or like the past few days. Granted, I'm at that time of the month, but I was literally saying to myself, I was like, I don't know why I want chocolate, but I just do. And I happen to have, like, quick plug, I happen to have some Beauty Bar chocolate in my fridge, which is our other friend Candace, and Beauty Bar chocolate is amazing.
So
you know, that those are some of the steps, and that's a very basic way, but like, cool, look at the behaviors that you know are destructive. I'm counting every calorie. I'm, you know, I'm weighing myself every day or every week. And then thirdly, what are my thoughts around food? How can I start? It's not going to be comfortable, but how can I start relaxing around food, taking a deep breath, eating slow, enjoying even the treats, and just see how that goes. Maybe all, you know, in itself, that can be where our portions will start to even out a little bit. When we just enjoy our food and eat slow, we can sometimes then, you know, we'll naturally be like, oh, cool, I'm full. And, mm-hmm. you know, I authentically don't want to eat, you know, the thing of Trader Joe's cupcakes every week now. Like, that's an authentic decision not to do that. I don't feel like I'm forcing myself not to do that. So mm-hmm. that's a slow process, but it's important. And the relationship to food is important with someone who's working through body image, because there's like 9 times out of 10, if there's a body image challenge, there's a fear of food and there's a fear of weight gain. And that's, you know, that's where our energy and calories come from. It's not always where weight gain can mm-hmm. come from. And then the last piece that I would say is trying to set up a positive environment. And people might have heard this before as well, but if there are Instagram accounts that you just keep popping across that just, you know, you're working on it and you want to be at a place where you're like, I want to be able to look at this picture and not feel jealous of her and not feel like ashamed of myself, but I'm just not at that place right now. So I'm going to unfollow this person, or I'm going to like try and limit my Instagram time. Like, your mental health is so much more important. And even though that can be a really hard decision to actually try and limit our Instagram or limit our scrolling, and we don't always have control of that digital environment that we're seeing every day, but even actively starting to follow people who are, you know, very positive body image people, who show, you know, body diversity and who like openly talk about it and share, and maybe they look like you particular. Like, I'm a big fan of that. Mm-hmm. Me personally, I know not every person who's challenged with body image. This is actually something I wanted to share, because I know like you will resonate with this. So not every person who's struggling with body image am I the right person for them to go to, because I still have an athletic looking body. I still have a body that maybe society right now, at the point of history that we're in, who knows what it'll be in 10 years or whatever, mm-hmm. but society is still showing sort of my body type as this is pretty, this is whatever. So someone who's struggling with body image and who doesn't fit that like exacerbated image that is thrown at us still every day more often than not, is going to resonate more with someone who looks like them and is doing that work as well. And that's okay.
Mm-hmm. That's actually a very good point, and shows how much you care about the work that you do, because you're not just putting yourself out there as if you can and want to work, or that you're the best fit for every body. It shows that you really care about the person and what's going to help them to heal. And I think that's true, that, you know, if the coach that you're working with is a trigger for you, and you find yourself comparing your body to them and just literally wanting to know what they eat every second of the day so that you can mimic that, that may not be the right partnership for you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like a neutral thing that it could be one way or the other. I could also be the perfect coach for someone like totally. That, right? But mm-hmm. it's just like that's an important relationship for us to feel, you know, connected. And sometimes that's a helpful component is, oh, I resonate with that person because they look like me. I could resonate with someone because it's a value that they have. So just to take that into account and like, if that's you and that is something that really matters, like that's okay. And seek that out.
Mm-hmm. And also I think too, people connect with you because they relate to some aspect of your story. Like you can see yourself in them and they can see themselves in you. And they connect with you because they know that they can relate to you, you know, and you've been through something similar. And that in and of itself creates a very, you know, positive understanding relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that's, you know, you see that piece of yourself in every client you work with, even if their challenge is vastly different than exactly what yours was, mm-hmm. there's still a piece and something about the story where there's a connection there and a resonation.
Yeah. And also what you said about social media, we just talked about that on a past episode because I'm so impassioned by the detox of people that make you feel less than, or that, you know, you find yourself constantly comparing yourself to. And I actually had a client who recently told me that she started following some accounts of women with curvier body types and hips and things like that. And she was like, I don't know why I never did this before because these women have my body type and I'm finding all of these new clothing brands that I love that fit yes. my body better. Like I'm finding jeans that hug my curves in all the right ways. And before I'm following all of these like super stick thin women and feeling like I need to fit the mold of what they're wearing. And when I try to wear those things, I feel like crap in my own body. But in reality, it's like, let me surround myself with people that make me feel positive about myself and my curves and empowered by them and excited to dress them.
Absolutely. Because that too, and, you know, seeing that sort of thing, whether it's something where we're like, oh, cool, like this is a clothing line and it's like, it fits, whether you're, you know, my athletic body, like that was me all through college. I couldn't buy jeans because my legs were too big and that was its own issue mm-hmm. or whatever, right? And it's the same, like so much, and we still have a long way to go, but there's a ton of amazing companies that, you know, they have sizes for everyone. And I try also, like I literally just bought a bathing suit on Amazon, but I purposely chose a company that had models of every size.
Yep. Yeah. And that's also a way that we can kind of be activists too, right? To support brands that are being more inclusive of all body types and to make a conscious effort, maybe not to go for the ones that are exclusive, you know? And I think I might have shared this in the intro. I can't remember now, but I remember back in the day when Abercrombie was super popular and all I wanted was to fit into like the 00 jeans. And it's like, why is that even a size?
Yes.
You know, like oh, that, zero's it,
that
not enough.
Size in itself creates body image challenges.
Yeah. For us. Like there's something less than zero. I mean, that is just, you should be smaller than zero. You should be less than nothing.
Oh, wow. You're so right. I forgot about that. That's, yeah. I used to get the magazines and same thing was like, would always go through the magazines and at a young age would feel like, ooh, this is provocative. And all of the models were very, 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 very skinny.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and what was crazy about Abercrombie was that they actually weren't allowed, they didn't, the way that they got away with having employees that all looked like models and had a certain body type was that they didn't hire employees, they hired models.
Yeah.
So that's legally,
ooh, I didn't know that either. Yeah,
that's legally how they were able to do it, which is crazy because they came under fire for it a lot because they would have models standing in front of the store shirtless. I don't know if you remember that, the greeters.
Oh, like male models shirtless?
Male and, like, yeah, male, well, yeah.
And like the, very, like, the women would still have like their stomach showing and everything.
Yeah. I don't really, I honestly only remember the males probably because I was staring at their six packs, but The women were in very little clothing, but yeah, it was male and female models. But I feel like it was mostly male to attract the women.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah. So anyway, such a good point. I'm so glad that you brought that up. And gosh, the time has been going so quickly. So before we get to the end of the interview, there's a few other things I wanted to make sure to touch on. And one of the things that I feel like can be so conflicting within sort of the wellness realm of things is like this one end of things where it's all about food freedom and like loving your body no matter what it looks like and completely, you know, eating intuitively, whatever you feel like. And then there's this other end, which is like the very like restrictive fad diets. But is there like this, do you believe that it's possible to have food freedom while still being mindful about the foods that you eat?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And I feel like even in the question how you asked it, like that is also the answer. So the first, you know, I mean, that's also would be my answer. So the first thing is that along that whole spectrum, we can maybe land somewhere, anywhere that feels good for us. So the full food freedom point, I really understand that from the aspect of like, yeah, even now, like I don't do Whole 30. I don't put myself in a situation where I'm structured to the point of I know I'm going to start to go down that snowball road, or I know there's a tendency, whether it's just, you know, how I'm wired or whatever, I'm just conscious that there's a tendency in my mentality to go down a bad road. So I just stay conscious of that. So the food freedom, I understand from that standpoint, especially if, you know, we just don't want any rules, or maybe we have gone through like, you know, some therapy around eating disorder or whatever. It's so the other, and we don't, we're just so scared of restriction. So that can be one part of food freedom. Now, the challenge with food freedom is that there's also science within nutrition and the nutrient-dense foods that we have and, you know, GMOs and non-organic and processed food and, my goodness, and sugar. And we just know that any human body eating too much of these, you know, ingredients that weren't designed for the human body necessarily could put us into illness, could put us into weight gain, could put us into hormone imbalance, or a number of different actual things that we, if we're sitting there, we would not describe as healthy. Mm-hmm. So that's where like the words that you use, you know, we're still intentional, we're still conscious, you know, how do I eat healthy? That's why I love your sexy swaps. Like,
thank you.
It's like, that's, you know, that's where it's at. It's like, cool. Let me just get curious. If I am just really hooked on, you know, the chocolate donuts right now, like, let me try a gluten-free version, or let me try and make my own with like organic flour or whatever. And, you know, starting to improve the ingredient quality. So there's still treats within that. There's still, you know, alcoholic drinks that just happen to be sugar-free, like mm-hmm. you guys make, and it's going to taste the same. It's the same, you know, experience with food. Food is an experience. And it's not to make ourselves be restricted. It's not to make ourselves feel less guilty or not have food freedom, but it's something that we're knowing after we're eating or drinking those foods, we're physically going to feel better, and we're physically honoring our health in you know, a better way than kind of that just like, oh yeah, whatever, I just, you know, yes, do whatever.
yes, absolutely. And that's the whole thing, is that, you know, it shouldn't be a compromise. It shouldn't be that if you have a goal that you're trying to reach, if you want to lose weight, for example, first of all, you shouldn't feel shamed for wanting to lose weight. If that's something that you want for the right reasons, you know, and you're sure of your why and you're ready to do it in a healthy, balanced way, of course, that's, you know, that can be celebrated. But thinking about how are you going to go about it in a way that feels right for your unique body, where you don't feel restricted. And I think a lot of the time when people are trying to lose weight, they're going on a diet that might say something like, you know, don't make anything that looks like a cookie because you want to completely rid your cravings of cookies. Or, you know, if you like chips, you need to have cucumbers instead. And it's like those things feel like a compromise. And absolutely, that's not sustainable over time ever. So if you can find like those sexy swaps that I always talk about that are healthier, not like perfectly clean all the time, but healthier options for the food and drinks that you crave, then you're going to be enjoying those things, feeling the way that you want physically and emotionally. And then when you go out to your favorite restaurant, get the damn pizza, you know, don't mm-hmm. order the salad.
Yes. And yeah, and that's where like the balance comes in and like your own personal, you know, food freedom of essentially the goal is maybe it's, you know, doesn't feel perfect 100% of the time, or I go through weeks where I'm not as prepared and I'm eating out a little more and I don't have as many of those decisions as I normally would if I'm making more of my own food. So that's the way I structure, like feeling or making our own personal balance of yes, to eat healthily is going to take a little bit of structure, definitely some intention and, you know, maybe some learning how to make some things or prepare some things or what brands to get. And then at the same time, outside of structure, also allowing the flow and giving ourselves permission, like you said, for just the real pizza when we want it or the real brownie and eating it slow, enjoying it mm-hmm. is creates the longevity of those habits.
Yes, which brings me to one of my last questions, which is what are a couple of other steps or tools that you might help somebody with who does want to lose weight in a more balanced way and does want to get away from yo-yo dieting or restrictive dieting?
Yes. So in my like happy goals planner and like the little habit tracker, the first thing that's why it is a habit tracker is instead of focusing on the number, instead of focusing on the weight that we want to lose or, you know, that exact size that we need to be, is start to draw a little bit of focus of if you're happy with your habits. And you can do a little visualization of if I were to describe like the super healthy me and their weekly healthy habits in food, fitness, and mindset, what would those be, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, healthy me. So looking at habits and then specifically surrounding if you are that person where you're like, okay, yeah, I feel like I do physically have a little weight to lose and I would just feel better and more energized and on purpose and feel more myself if I were to do that, that's great. And I want to do it in a healthy way. So starting to look at, as I mentioned before, food quality. So if you have some things you just know you're doing, like, yep, I'm still stopping at McDonald's twice a week, or, you know, I'm still doing grab and go or eating bars every day, starting to improve food quality and getting more towards whole foods as close to their natural source as mm-hmm. possible. So just whole foods, like, you know, if you eat meat, like chicken, eggs, fish, steak, vegetables, fruits, and, you know, you can still incorporate some breads. You can try gluten-free. You might, even if you don't know for a fact if you're sensitive or like really sensitive to gluten, you can try without it to see how you feel. Sometimes that will, you know, just get rid of some bloat anyways.
Yeah.
And then the next one I would say is meal timing. So if you're skipping meals, or eating really, really late and a big meal for dinner at night, that can be something just directly connected to how most of our metabolisms work. We're all unique, but we have, you know, an ebb and flow, just like our sleep cycle, where in the morning, even if we're not hungry, our body is asking for energy. It's ready to be, you know, to get started for the day. Intermittent fasting is a whole other conversation. And I think it's, yeah. It could be something to experiment with if you, you know, don't have any side effects from it and you're not doing it, specifically because you're trying to skip meals. So in general, meal timing is try and eat 3 meals a day. Try and have lunch be your bigger meal and dinner not as big, and have a snack, like 1 to 2 snacks a day, if that works for you with like your lifestyle and how busy you are. And, you know, work through that. Try and have that structure where you're consistently having 3 meals a day. More often than not, as crazy as it is, most of us are not eating enough.
Yep.
And that's more connected to us keeping weight on our body than eating more. So yes. When we start to eat more, especially if it's mostly, it doesn't have to all be, but if it's mostly, you know, fairly healthy, balanced meals, it's going to be, you know, our metabolism is going to increase. And then we'll start to be like, whoa, every 3 hours, like, wow, I'm actually physically hungry. We're more in tune with our appetite. We're actually going to be burning more energy off when we have regular meals. And the last piece is to check in on macronutrient balance. So if I'm eating really healthy, but I'm still eating just, you know, potatoes, rice, corn, like those are all whole foods that I mentioned, but they're all carbs. So macronutrient balance is being sure that every plate I have has some carbs, has, you know, about 25% of the plate should be protein. And then if we can, up to half of our plate should be fruits and veggies.
Yes. And I'm so glad you made those points about not eating enough, because that is the number one thing that I find with the clients that I work with. It's not that they're eating too much. It's that they're not eating enough. And as a result, they are feeling like they cannot wait for their quote unquote cheat days or the weekends, you know, mm-hmm. And that sort of leads to some of those binges, and also that sort of holding on to weight and your body going into that starvation mode. And if you're working out on top of it, burning into lean muscle and not really getting the results from your workouts because you're not fueling yourself with the proper nutrition. And so I think that's a really, really important point to make, that we can eat a lot of food, especially as women. It is okay to eat food, but yes. Making sure that for the most part, it is, you know, food that makes us feel the way that we want to feel and fuels us in the way that we want to be fueled.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that's a really, really great point. And I think it's funny because it's so simple of like have a balanced plate. It doesn't have to be that it's just all one macronutrient and none of the next. If we want to achieve balance, then we also want to put that, you know, forward facing on our plate.
Yeah. Absolutely. And that's connected to weight balance as well. That's, you know, last point on the macronutrients is sometimes there can be a fear of fat, thinking that fat in food is fat on my body. And that is a huge myth.
Such a myth.
Fat, especially healthy fats, avocado, coconut, really good olive oil, nuts. Fat in food helps burn fat on our body.
Yep. It's fat is back and it is here to stay.
Yes. And it is very delicious.
It's so good. It's so much more satisfying. I just love like a good piece of sourdough with nut butter on top. And like, I don't know, there's just something about like a couple big spoons of like delicious nut butter on like a dense piece of bread that is just so satisfying to me and something I would never have allowed myself in the past, but just makes me feel so amazing. And now I know, like speaking of intuitive eating, I know that that works really well for me.
Yeah, totally. And it's like, and it's so great to see too, that then when you're listening to those, you know, they're going to come up less often, as opposed to when we're not listening to those intuitive, you know, things like I really want a piece of my sourdough with nut butter right now.
Yeah.
And then on the back end of that is like, oh, no. The thought of that bread, right? Where thoughts go, energy flows.
Yeah.
So if we're always thinking like, I can't have that, we're going to have the thought of I want that
exactly
that more.
We all want what we quote unquote can't have. So mm-hmm. So if we can have whatever we want and we just choose the things that make us feel good in the moment, then it truly can be as simple as that sometimes. I feel like when I restricted carbs for the many years that I did, that's all I ever wanted. But now that I have them every single day, I'm not dreaming or counting down the days when I can have a piece of bread because I just can have it whenever I want. It's not that big of a deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just to wrap up, a couple of questions. What is one of your favorite sexy swaps? And what is a food that you are so happy to be eating again, to not be restricting, to be eating with joy?
Yeah, these are great questions. So one of my favorite, I would call this a sexy swap, protein pancakes. So it's so funny, and this comes full circle because I was actually given this recipe while I was doing my bodybuilding show. And they're probably the one and only thing that doesn't, you know, make me frustrated to see, like, you know, just plain chicken breast and spinach on a plate. That I'm just like, nope, that's not appealing to me. But these protein pancakes are amazing. It's literally just banana and egg, and you throw it in the blender. Sometimes I'll put, so if it's just banana and egg, it's definitely going to come out a little bit crepey type of texture. So for more pancake texture, I do add a little bit of almond flour, and I'll sometimes still put some like vanilla extract, maybe a little bit of like monk fruit, like sweetener, and the banana sweetens it itself, though. It's like a banana pancake. And then maybe a little bit of like baking powder to where then if you like poofy pancakes, I like crepey, Bruce likes poofy, so we do a little middle of the road. You cook it just like a pancake, and then I still do have like, I get good like high quality maple syrup where it just takes a little bit, and I still have like the butter and the maple syrup, but it's not as heavy as far as like, you know, the like processed, you know, box of pancake mix.
Oh, that sounds so good. I love banana pancakes. Actually, if you'll send me your recipe, I'll put it on in the show notes.
Yes, I will send you that.
Awesome.
Yeah. And then honestly, the food that, you know, is like, it's kind of like you described where when you're having your bread now and it's authentic, and like, I don't say this lightly, because if someone had told me that this was possible when I was going to eat my, you know, Trader Joe's chocolate cupcakes and I didn't want to be eating them, that it was possible to eat them and just stop in the middle and just not actually want to have the rest of it, I would have been like, you're crazy. I'm never going to be that person. So it's Trader Joe's vanilla cake is my favorite thing now. So it's something that, same thing, you know, it's Bruce and I's little treat we get every once in a while, and it's vanilla chantilly cake from Trader Joe's. The frosting is amazing.
Oh my gosh.
And we allow ourselves that treat and that dessert, and I enjoy it, and it doesn't, you know, it's helpful to enjoy because it's not out of like stress, and I'm not guilty while I'm doing it.
So. It's from a place of joy, not stress or sadness. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or guilt. I love that. Thank you so much. Those are great. And I want to end by you sharing about, you know, how can people stay in touch with you if they want to work with you or they want to check out your Happy Goals Tracker. Tell us all of the things.
Yeah. You can find me on my website, which is tessietracy.com, TESSIETRACY. And I'm the same on Instagram. I live there, you know, when I'm not at my house. Instagram is my digital home.
Yeah.
So it's at Tessie Tracy there. And then if you want to check out the Happy Goal Tracker, you can go to tessietracy.com/sale. So I have it on sale. So you can go to tessietracy.com/sale, and it's 30% off right now.
Amazing. It's such a great tool to have. I highly recommend that you guys check it out. I think having a supportive tool like this to check in with every day is so helpful. So, so helpful. And it helps you to set goals in a way that's sustainable, realistic, fun. Like, you're going to look forward to writing in this journal. So definitely check it out. And then you do one-on-one coaching as well, right?
Yes, I do. And on TessieTracy.com, there's like a little link to sign up for a complimentary 20-minute call with me. So I'm
fabulous.
Open. Yes.
Okay, check it out, everyone. Tessie's amazing. Thank you so much for this conversation. I feel like we could talk for another 12 hours about all this. So we're going to have to do another chat down the line.
Yes, it was so great catching up with you and chatting about this. I'm so passionate about it. Thank you for having me. And yeah, we'll chat soon.
Okay, love you. Stay warm.
Thanks. Love you too. Bye.
Well, thank you all so much for joining me for my first solo intro and first solo interview experience. That was actually super fun. And of course, I missed my co-host, Rye, but you know, I gotta be proud of myself for doing that on my own, and she will be back. We're gonna do an actual solo episode with the two of us pretty soon, so stay tuned for that. And I hope that you are able to take some helpful tools, tangible tips away from this episode. I just love Tessie's approach. I love that she always provides us with something that we can take away and start to implement in our own lives today if we wanted to. So, you know, I always remind myself if there's like one golden nugget that I take from an episode or a book or a podcast or whatever it is, that is enough. And that can actually be such a game changer in our lives. We don't have to remember everything or implement everything overnight. But if there's just one little thing that we can do or one little action step we can take, that can mean the world. So I hope that you all have a wonderful rest of your afternoon, your evening, wherever you are. And again, friendly reminder, if you enjoyed this episode, make sure to take a screenshot, tag us in your stories at Solo 2.0 Podcast, and we'll be sure to share it. And let us know if there's any guests that you would like to see on our podcast, because we always want to hear from you. We will see you next time. Oh, and remember, if nothing feels right today, you tuning into this podcast and opening your mind is enough. Change doesn't happen overnight, so be patient and kind to yourself, and good things will come. I think I just did that from memory. Love you all. Bye.